This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
The Royals have a chance today to have the worst offensive stretch in the history of a game that's been played since Jesus was here.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Beards, I know you are doing some like archival work, going back into our past to find new liners and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any memory of what that was from?
When they had the super bad stretch where they went scoreless for however many innings that was.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
All right, the worst baseball that had been played since Jesus was here is what I said?
That's what you said.
All right, sure. That seems like something I'd say.
Pronounce Day Jesus.
Since David DeJesus.
No, Day Jesus.
I wonder if David Leske remembers exactly what stretch we're referring to there. If he can tell us exactly how many innings the scoring drought went. You can follow him on Twitter at DBLeske, and you can check out Inside the Crown, his new newsletter on Substack, insidethecrown.substack.com. I said this at the beginning of the show. I'll say it again now. It has just been banger after banger after banger on Inside the Crown. So we'll talk about a bunch of those things momentarily. But do you remember how long that stretch of scoreless innings was, Leske?
Oh, man. I want to say 33 innings. But so here's the problem is it's hard to know which scoreless stretch it was that you were talking about. There was one, and this is, I mean, very clearly before your show, because I think I was in high school, but they were shut out in like three straight games against the Twins. Maybe I was, I don't know. It might not have been that long ago, but I feel like it was like, it was three straight games against the Twins and then part of another game, maybe against the Orioles or something. I want to say like 2005 or two or something a long, long time ago. They go scoreless a lot. They do it for long periods of time because the Royals go big or go home, and often they just go home.
Beard says that they went home for 45 consecutive innings in 2017.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It was a Whit Merrifield homer, it looks like, that fixed it.
Day before my birthday.
And didn't they score, like, 8 runs the day before that started or something like that?
I'm occasionally really genuinely surprised by where this show ends up, and I just, like, recounting the 2017 scoreless stretch from the Royals is just not where I thought you were going to be.
The longest streak in MLB history was 48, held by the 1968 Cubs and the 1906 Oakland A's.
I do remember that, because I was mad at that point they didn't just go break the record. Like, just get the record for futility. If you're going to be that bad, be historically bad.
There is nothing more Royals than being terrible, yes, but not being quite terrible enough to be remembered forever.
You're so right. You're so right. I'll mention this before I have to yell at Leske about it, as I'm contractually obligated to do. Inside the Crown on Substack is totally free to sign up for. I am not giving Leske any of my money for all of these excellent articles that he's written so far. You don't have to either. Maybe someday. I don't know. Seth has set a very bad precedent where like $2 a month is robbery. Leske's out here just saying, I'll just give it to you if you just go sign up and put in your email. So you should really do that if you want to be smarter about the Royals. Do you want to make us smarter, Leske? This show's been really stupid today. We could really use like a smart adult.
Well, then you've come to the wrong place. So I'll do my best.
You've written a lot of things since we talked to you last week, which is, again, the turnout on Inside the Crown has been wonderful. But the most sort of like overarching thing you took a look at was sort of looking at the Royals' biggest moves from this offseason and kind of accounting for what you would have done differently. And honestly, I don't really know what I would have expected to be specifically different, but I was kind of gearing up for like, Here are a few things. Here's a big mistake they made. Here's a big thing they whiffed on. Here's where I feel like they really messed up on something or other. And honestly, it seems like, you know, you're kind of lukewarm on Michael A. Taylor and Mike Minor and that you would have added another starter. But for the most part, you seemed pretty good with how the offseason panned out, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had a pretty decent offseason. You know, the Michael A. Taylor move was one I didn't like, and I still don't like it, for him as a starter. I think he's a pretty good fourth outfielder, and that would have been nice. But then you start to look around, okay, well, who else could they have gotten? Yeah, they could have signed Jackie Bradley Jr. And actually still could because he's still out there, which tells me they probably weren't going to get him for what I think what I think he's worth. Mm. The last we heard was he wants 4 years. I wouldn't give him 4 years. Mm. I would give him two. I might give him like a mutual option for a third that never gets exercised. But I mean, I don't think that him at 4 years is the answer. You know, like I said in the article, Jake Mariznick probably would have been my choice if I was going for a guy who shouldn't start but was going to, just because he has a little more power than Michael A. Taylor. But you know, ultimately, some of these moves, you're like, well, I didn't like the second year on Mike Minor, but I don't mind it as a move. I very rarely does this happen that I look at the Royals offseason and I'm like, I would have done a couple things differently, but not that differently. Because usually I'm really disagreeing with Dayton Moore. And this offseason, I think he did a really nice job. He went out and he got the on-base percentage that he coveted. I really love Jurickson Profar. I love the idea of him playing left field for the Royals for the next 3 years. Didn't happen. That's okay. Went out and got, I don't know if it's the next best thing or a better thing, but, I mean, Benintendi is, I think, on par with Profar. Probably a little bit higher floor, maybe slightly lower ceiling, although I'm not sure if that's even true. You had to give up players for it, not just money. So that's whatever. But, again, I like the move. So it's hard to get too upset with any of that.
I found out by reading this, by the way, that Michael Franco is still unsigned. I just straight up learned that reading. I just sort of assumed that he ended up finding a home somewhere else, because I don't remember hearing anything about him coming back. But you mentioned him a little bit also in conjunction with one thing that you wish they would have done a little more, which was to push Nicky Lopez and kind of maybe force him into that kind of utility role instead of just assuming that he's going to be a full part of the starting lineup. Can you give me the Nicky Lopez concern / mindset at this point? And also, would you try to sell Dayton Moore right now and maybe seeing if Franco wants a reunion?
Well, yeah. So with Nicky Lopez, the reason the Royals aren't giving up on him, and not even giving up on him, but are not pushing him to a utility role or even AAA because he's got options left. He doesn't even have 600 plate appearances. I don't think. I think it's like 597 in his career, and so. You know, I know that people hate to hear that you got to give a guy 1,500 plate appearances, because we remember all that with Hosmer, Moustakas, and them. But he also, he's basically played a full season, and it's not been good. You've seen some glimpses of what it could be, and the upside is not very, very high. He just doesn't hit the ball very hard, and that's the problem for me. I'm curious to see what he does this season. You know, maybe he settled in a little bit. He didn't start with the big club in 2019. Then 2020, he tried to bulk up, but then there was the weird four-month gap between spring training and when the season ended up starting. I'm interested to see what he does. And I think, I don't know that I would have given him this chance, but he's going to get it. So I'm very curious to see if he can maybe, you know, be the guy he was in the minors, where he was a high average guy who didn't swing and miss a ton. And look, regardless, he's going to play great defense. We know that. He played phenomenal defense in 2020. So that's a good thing. But, you know, with Michael Franco, I think he'd make the Royals better. They liked him in the clubhouse, right? I mean, he seemed like he was a guy who the team kind of rallied around. He played through injury, which always endears you to teammates. I think he led the team in RBIs, which is not the most sabermetric thing, but you know, so it happened. It was a good thing. And if the Royals are comfortable playing Dozier in the outfield, it puts Nicky Lopez back on the bench, because Whit Merrifield would probably move to second base, and I think it makes the team better. Or if nothing else, you've got Franco as a guy who could be kind of a super sub. I mean, he only plays, I guess, two positions if you count first base, but. Because of Dozier's versatility and Merrifield's versatility, he's a guy who could put Hanser Alberto at second base against a lefty, and then put Franco at third and Dozier in left, and put Benintendi on the bench against a tough lefty, and all of a sudden you've got a lineup that absolutely destroys left-handed pitching. So that would be nice too. Yeah. And for the price he's going to cost, look, for guys who are unsigned, it's February 25th. Spring training started a week and a half ago. There's games on Sunday. I would think he would come at a pretty reasonable cost, but you know, so far I haven't heard a single thing about him this offseason. Not a single rumor regarding him with any team, and there are a handful of teams that could use him. But you just haven't heard a thing about him, which is really odd coming off a solid season.
Yeah, it is. It is very strange, just because whenever the fact that all of that is true just had me assuming that he was somewhere in the National League. Like, I don't know. I just sort of disappeared off the radar.
The Nationals are a perfect fit. They don't have a ton of money left to spend because they spent it all on Max Scherzer for the next 35 years this year for it. And they have Carter Kieboom playing third base. He's been terrible in the big league. Why wouldn't you give Michael Franco $2.5 million and round out that lineup? But whatever, that's their business, not mine.
I have no idea. It's very strange. But you mentioned Hunter Dozier just then in his versatility. We talked about him some last week also, and that you were working on this piece that's now out that people can go read. If I take your conclusion here, your thesis statement, as Hunter Dozier can be the best position player on the Royals if he puts it all together, if I'm accepting that as sort of the take here, how likely do you think that outcome is whenever you take a look at what it's going to take for him to successfully, as you say there, you know, take it all together?
I think he has a good chance, and the reason is because the things that he's done well tend to normalize pretty quickly. His play discipline tends to normalize pretty quickly, and even when he wasn't as good as he was in 2020, he was still taking pitches. He was still doing a nice job of laying off bad pitches and all that. And I don't know, I feel like based on everything he said, and Lynn Worthy had a good article, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, I saw it this morning, about how COVID affected him last season. I mean, he came back to the team, and he was still, his energy was just zapped. And you could see, I showed in the article, he wasn't driving the ball. And this is a big guy in really good shape. He's a guy who, if he's popping up, if he's not hitting the ball hard, there's got to be something wrong with him because he's just so strong. I think it was in Lynn's article, he made the point that in 2019 through like mid-May, he was not only keeping pace with Soler, but outpacing him in a lot of ways. And Soler ended up hitting 48 home runs. So, I mean, it was sort of a really good season before he had that weird injury that I think it was in Texas that he got hurt. And he came back and he was fine, but it wasn't the same. And so I feel like if he can stay healthy this season, and he's got his strength back, which I would assume he does at this point. And he can kind of put that together with the patience the extra patience that he showed in 2020. I mean, the guy I kept coming back to, and the guy I thought of before I even looked at the comps was Paul Goldschmidt. And then as soon as I run the numbers, I see 2018 Paul Goldschmidt, and I was like, yes, I'm a genius. That is, I've unlocked the code here. But, I mean, if you think, really, the profile is kind of Paul Goldschmidt. And that's one of the best hitters in baseball over a 5 or 6 year period. So, I think there's a chance. It's not 100% for sure. It's maybe not even 50% because Dozier's had health issues his whole career. And so that's a huge factor. But if he can stay healthy and play, I don't know, 135, 140 games, he has a chance to put up some monster numbers if he puts it all together. And I think it's very possible.
I'm kind of just working through the lineup here because you also read about Salvador Perez. And whenever we talked about, you know, like Andrew Benintendi last week and all of the different, I mean, it feels like half of this lineup, and I think this is an okay thing, honestly, especially if you're in a position like the Royals right now. I think like half of this lineup seems to have, well, if they're at their best, then X, Y, or Z potential, which it's incredibly unlikely that everyone is going to have their best case scenario. Again, we talked about that with you last week, but like, If you are going to make that case for Salvador Perez, like, can he run back what his performance was last year? You took a look at that in another story up on Inside the Crown. But I start to get, I don't know if I'm optimistic or if I'm just kind of excited to see how it plays out, because not everyone is going to have their best possible season, but hopefully a couple of them will, and then those guys get kind of permanent spots in the future, I guess. Is that a fair way of looking at it? Is there a different way that you're looking at kind of that larger conversation about how many of these guys can play their best ball for a full season?
No, I mean, they do have a lot of questions, but up and down the lineup, if they're answered in the way the Royals hope they are, they could be really good.
Yeah.
I mean, not just Perez, but look at look at Adalberto Mondesi, who I've sat down to start writing about so many times, and then I just throw my arms in the air. I'm like, I have somebody else. I'm done. I can't. Because I think we talked about this last week. He was literally the worst hitter in baseball for a month and a half.
Yep.
And then literally just flipped a switch and then was the best hitter in baseball for the last 20 games. Who is he? What is he? And he's the most extreme, obviously. But, I mean, if you look up and down the lineup, who's the – there are maybe two guys, I think, that you look at and you go, okay, I think we have a pretty good idea what we're going to get from him. It's Whit Merrifield and probably Carlos Santana, I feel like. And even he had a bad year in 2020, so who knows? But, I mean, Andrew Benintendi, I think he's going to be fine, but we can't know that for sure. The guy hasn't been healthy since August of 2019. Salvador Perez, who I wrote about today, he had declining numbers for four or five straight seasons, and then all of a sudden, after a year off and only having to play a 60-game schedule, which ended up being 39 for him because of the eye issues, I think, that were part of that came from his COVID diagnosis, all that. He had a lot of rest, but he had a great season. Can he repeat that? I don't know. Jorge Soler, can you stay healthy? If he's healthy, if Jorge Soler is healthy, we know what we're going to get from him. It's a guy who just blisters the ball, hits a bunch of home runs, and is the guy who you pitch around, opposing pitchers pitch around to get through the lineup. It's Dozier and Mondesi and all these guys. We just don't really 100% know what they're going to be, except for Whit Merrifield, who I think we can pretty safely pencil in probably for about a 285 to 290 average, 340-ish on base, and 425 slugging percentage. And that's great. Good. Move on. He's the guy we know about. Which means after I've said this, he's going to hit 212 in 2021.
Well, so. If that happens, there are bigger problems at hand. Then, other than your prediction being wrong, will not be the thing that I think leads off most Kansas City sports talk radio. If Whit suddenly can't hit anymore,
yeah. But I mean, there is a lot of well, it could be this or that. But I think what the encouraging thing is with a lot of these guys, Mondesi, Benintendi, Soler, Dozier, these guys are still either pre-prime, theoretically, by age, or in their prime.
Mm-hmm.
Santana's past it. He's 35, I think, this year. Mm-hmm. So there are questions. If he can – some guys just don't age well, and 35 in baseball is not young. So there's a possibility that maybe he just doesn't have it. I would be surprised, given how well he played in 2019. It just seems – it's too convenient that this short season is what ended Santana's run of being good offensively. So I don't think so. But yeah, but then the rest of them, for the most part, are in prime years. And I think that's if you're going to bet on guys to be their best, these are the ages you bet on them to be their best in.
Yeah.
And so I think that bodes well for the Royals.
Yeah, I think at the very least, none of us are being paid necessarily to get it right, you know, in terms of like the contracts that are being handed out, which we're going to actually get to in terms of Brad Keller in a moment. But especially if you're listening right now and as a fan, there's at least those are all good reasons to be optimistic. Even if it's not ball game, this entire lineup is going to be nothing but absolute perfection 1 through 9. That's something to be excited about, which I feel like in a February conversation about the Royals going into 2021, that's all right. I'll take what we could get there. But the idea of being glad that we're not the ones making decisions about contracts and whatnot came up in your story about Brad Keller, which I wanted to dig into a little bit because there's a lot of stuff going on here. It's really all of these pieces have been good, but the Brad Keller one I think goes into just so many interesting details. And you're going to have to summarize some of them in radio audience format here. But sort of the setup is Brad Keller is a very unique pitcher in the grand scheme of all pitching, it seems, at this point. Can you explain for the radio audience what it is that makes Brad Keller a pitching outlier, or as you've described him in the piece as perhaps being a bit of a unicorn?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Keller, there are a lot of guys who have had success without getting a ton of strikeouts, a lot of guys who have had success with walking a few too many, a lot of guys who have had success with good ground ball rates, all that. It's hard to find guys with his velocity who don't get strikeouts, do walk too many hitters, and get a ton of ground balls. I don't know why that. It doesn't seem like it would be that odd of a skill set, but it really is. And I look back to, I think, 1995. Now, I wrote this like 3 days ago, so I've completely taken it out of my head right now. But I think there were 28 other pitchers since 1995 with a strikeout rate below 20%, and Keller's is like 17 in his career, through the ages of 22 to 26. But that's the other qualifier. A walk rate of like 8 to 11%, and then a ground ball rate of above 49%. That doesn't seem that weird, but there were only 28 other pitchers in the last 26 seasons, which is bizarre. And the weird thing is, something like 75% of them ended up hurt, or one of them was Yordano Ventura. So the problem with what I went into this article wanting to do is figure out, okay, let's take a look at who Brad Keller pitches like and see how he's going to age. Because I personally, I remember this, I wrote early in the offseason, I think he's a great extension candidate for a number of reasons. But I just wanted to see if it makes sense to not just go year to year with him, because you got him for three more years regardless, at least under team control. So the problem is, I still don't know the answer. I went through this whole article and this whole process, and at the end, I'm going, well, there's still his closest comps are Justin Masterson and Garrett Richards. And Masterson, he didn't get hurt right away, so there's some comps there. But also, his control didn't really improve like Keller's did last season. And then Garrett Richards got hurt. So, I mean, you're looking at these names, and I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I still don't know. But I spent far too long writing this to not publish it. So you're going to get the answer that I don't know. But it's just, he's weird.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Sure.
But, you know, I was on the Seren a couple of days ago, and one name that I thought of that didn't fit the criteria, so he wasn't mentioned, but a guy like Lance Lynn kind of feels Keller-ish to me. He's a big guy who had some. The stuff looked good, but he never really got a ton of strikeouts, but the results were there. And now he's later in his career has learned how to get some swings and misses, and now he's just an absolute horse at the top of rotations. The White Sox, and they gave up one of their better – I guess Dane Dunning, is, they had a bunch of pitching prospects. But they gave up a good pitching prospect for him along with some other stuff, there's a good reason for that. They needed that guy to go along with Giolito and Keuchel. And, you know, I think that's, if you're looking at the long-term future of Brad Keller, I think Lance Lynn's the guy you look at to see, okay, he can add some strikeouts and he can be that horse at the top of a rotation. You know, Lynn threw 84 innings last season, I think, in a 60-game season. I think he led all of baseball in the regular season. And Keller... Also, he only made 9 starts, I think, because he started the season on the COVID list. But he was 6-plus innings pretty much every start. And the thing he does really, really well that I didn't even get into because I was just so deep into it the other way, he doesn't give up extra base hits. So, yeah, he might put a guy on first base to walk him, but it's going to take at least 2 hits to score that guy because he's not going to give up an extra base hit. He had 2 homers, and they were both to Vogelbach of the Mariners, who – is a large adult son, and and he, you know, he's so much fun to watch. Not because he's good, but he's just a big boy, and I like watching big boys.
I wish I wasn't laughing over that because it's gonna make the liner less funny. Because I was already laughing. I'm really mad at myself. I really screwed that one up.
Well, you know what? That's on you.
Do you want to get a clean cut now? Sorry, you cut out there, Lesky. What did you say about Daniel Vogelbach?
I said that he's a very fine young player who I don't know if his future is as bright as Brad Keller would think. That's all I said.
Would you call him anything? Would you reference sort of his?
I like watching big boys hit.
Beards can work with that. Beards can figure.
I'll make something out of it.
Beards will either never use that or it'll be remixed into a song by the start of next segment. I don't know. Which one of the two?
I'm hoping for both.
Me too, actually. Me too.
But, yeah, I mean, Keller's a weird guy. He's a weird guy. I don't know if he's a weird guy. He's a weird pitcher. I don't know Brad Keller very well. So I couldn't tell you if he's a weird guy or not. But he's interesting. But the biggest thing about Keller that I think gets talked about maybe just enough, but probably should be talked about a little bit more, we're going to have all this young pitching.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. I mean, up and down the minor league system now, it's an embarrassment of riches. Keller's like a year older than a lot of the upper level guys.
Right. That's one of the things I wanted to ask about.
Really good season.
Yeah. So like that's the thing. I literally just pulled up. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, he's 25, but he's not. We don't consider him to be a peer. I don't typically consider him to be a peer of all of those young pitchers that we refer to as simply the young pitchers. And you know exactly who I'm talking about whenever I say that. That group doesn't include Brad Keller.
Right. And Singer, Coar, and Lynch, I think they're all 24 now. Or they'll be in their age 24 season, so they'll turn 24 before July 1st if they're not. I can't remember their birthdays.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Reasonable.
I guess I'm not going to get them a gift this year. but Keller's not that much older. I mean, he doesn't turn 26 until July. I think it's fascinating. This is just total side note. Brad Keller, Adalberto Mondesi, and Foster Griffin, all born the same day. Not the same birthday, same day and same year. So the exact same day. That fascinates me.
I think I remember hearing that about Mondesi. I didn't know Foster Griffin was also in that group. On me, really.
And I'm pretty sure that his big league debut, that he pitched well but then left with the elbow injury that led to Tommy John, I think was on his birthday.
I think that's right.
So, yeah, it's a weird little quirk.
It is very strange.
You know, you probably won't see a lot of that in organizations anymore, so we have to savor these moments.
Really important, yeah.
Where we can see that shared birthdays.
Yeah, hugely.
It's July 27th, I believe.
They will be
getting cards.
All three of them are going to get a free subscription to Inside the Crown, which is already free.
That's right.
On July 27th in honor of their birthdays in 1995, the days of their birth.
That's a great idea. I'm just going to start doing that for everybody.
Just start guessing. Just brad.keller@gmail.com. brad.keller@yahoo.com. brad.keller@geocities.com. AOL.com.
BKeller69@hotmail.com.
How about can we throw a Juno email address in there?
Yeah, please? Absolutely.
I want to assume that he's a 78-year-old man.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, you just start signing him up. So I mean, you're not gonna give. You didn't get to the point where you feel like you can give the answer to what like the future of Brad Keller should be or what the Royals should do in this spot. But you did mention his changeup a little bit. That I think you said he rolled out there 17 times last year. If my reading comprehension's worth a thing. Are you willing to like maybe gamble a little bit on that being good again this year, but just being used more often and that maybe adding another level to his game? Or is that something where you're in more of a place where you say, you know, if that comes together, great, and if not, I'm not going to be heartbroken about it?
Well, you know, we haven't played a game yet. We haven't seen a game being played in spring training. And
that's true. That's fair.
It's all these guys are real gung-ho about throwing these new pitches. And they are so excited to tell you about every little inch of movement they get off it. And the second they throw it in a game and it gets hit, there's that little time period where you wonder, is he ever going to throw it again?
Yeah.
Because it's perfect until it's not. And that's the case with all of these new pitches that pitchers throw every single spring. You hear all these stories. And then, you know, it gets hit around in surprise, which everything gets hit around in surprise because it's a terrible pitching environment. And you just wonder if it's going to get shelved. And so I think one of the answers to that, give him a couple spring starts. And we saw, I think he threw a few changeups in surprise last year early. And I think he gave up like a double and a triple or something. I want to say against the Mariners before everything shut down.
I got to tell you, if you're wrong, there's no one on planet Earth will be able to fact check that. So you're
exactly. So I'm pretty much just saying whatever I feel. Yeah, like. I'm making stuff up right now.
Yeah.
But, no, I remember listening to a game, and I think it might have been like Denny's first game. I don't know, because he always comes late in spring training, and it was. And I remember hearing the changeup gets hit, and then you just didn't hear changeup again. And then you're 17 out of 1,000 pitches or whatever it was. I think they're 2% changeup. So it was not used. and so you just you always have to wait and see on these new pitches because, like I said, they throw them in a bullpen all winter long, and there's no live hitting. And if there is, it's not really it's a different environment. And so everything looks great until an actual opponent gets in the batter's box, sees it, and crushes it. And then you just wonder if they're ever going to throw it again. So yeah. I think Keller does a good enough job of manipulating his pitches that he could end up with a good changeup. I just want to make sure he actually does throw it. But, yeah, if he does, that could be the perfect complement. I kind of like the idea. Jacob Junis, Alec wrote about this today, developing a cutter. I kind of like the idea of a cutter for Keller better than a changeup even, but he didn't consult me, unfortunately.
Right.
And I guess I had the wrong email address.
Right, when you sent him a birthday gift and everything. It's really rude of him not to even ask you about it.
It was terrible. Well, I haven't sent it yet. I mean, I think he just knew it was coming. I sent it to BradleyKeller@Juno.com, and I never got a response. So I personally, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of that. But look, everything that comes out of Keller's hand is hard. And a changeup, if he can get some more separation, because he didn't have a lot of separation on velocity between the fastball and changeup last year. If he can get a little more separation, that could be a really, really good pitch, even if it's not anything that gets results, even if it just sets up a high fastball, because we can bring it back to that from last week, mm-hmm. the high fastballs. That could be a difference maker for him. So I'm really curious to see him throw it in spring games and see if he sticks with it. And if he does, I feel even better about it. Like I said, I would give Keller 4 or 5 years right now. He's 20, 25 years old.
Yeah.
If I had a couple free agent years, you're good to go. It's not going to be terribly expensive. Totally worth it to have that guy, and even in the middle of the rotation. But if he can add a changeup and it's good, he could be even better than that, and then you got a steal.
Earlier we tried to bully you into giving us liner material, but my favorite thing happened partway through your conversation there about Brad Keller's future, which is that you accidentally gave us something that we'll use to introduce you whenever we talk to you next week, and you're not even going to know what it was until we come around again next week with the intro, and honestly,
I got to go back through my head now and think about what I said.
No, it'd be better if you didn't, and you can just forget about it and be surprised next week, and we'll all be better off for it.
That sounds good to me.
Thank you, Lasky. We'll talk to you again then, and hopefully Beards will have a special intro for you.
I can't wait.
David Lasky, you can read all of his work for free. It's even less money than Seth charges for his Substack at insidethecrown.substack.com. Follow him on Twitter at dblesky. Seriously, now I'm feeding a fed horse, but if you care about being smarter about some Royals baseball things, sign up for Inside the Crown. It'll just show up in your email. It's a super convenient way of reading it, or you can go to that URL and actually read things from there. But it's just they're easy reads. Not every single thing is a behemoth, but it's all really smart. It'll make you smarter about the Royals, but in a fun way, which is a really tough needle to thread. But Lesky does a really excellent job of that. So check out Inside the Crown on Substack, or just go click the link at his Twitter account, which is at dblesky. And you know, look, I mean, everything that comes out of Brad Keller's hand. Everything. He said it. I didn't say it. You know what's exciting whenever one segment has you excited for the sort of redo of that segment in a week? It's very enticing. Also, he likes watching big boys.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Like, what is the touchiest thing you can think of?
A touchpad.
I thought for sure you were going to say me.
No, that would be gross and weird.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I would really like to get to a point where we can do something with like our commercial conversation streams.
I'd be fired probably.
It would just, it's just, listen, the filters are different. That's just the truth of the matter. I don't remember what this is a quote from, but it's from some TV show or something, but it's, unless everybody gets real cool about a lot of stuff real quick, .. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
That sounds familiar, but I can't think of what it is.
That's Ryan, that also. It seems very familiar, but I can't place it. Shout out to Joe on Twitter who just tweeted, no context here other than it ends with at JB Briscoe, and then it's just an Amazon link, hashtag Amazon, and it's for an earwax removal kit. And I just love, I've got it open in a tab. I'm going to take a closer look later.
It's only $8 because I was about to say, here's the problem. You know how much money this is going to cost?
I just opened it.
It's only $8.
I just love that that tweet, totally out of context, doesn't make any sense at all, but it makes perfect sense within the context of this show
tonight. The problem is, it's for ears, and I'm looking for one for my AirPods. I don't think this does the trick.
But maybe your ears are going to be so pristine that your AirPods are never going to get goopy again.
Nah, I think the AirPods are always still going to get like a little bit of earwax in there.
Ooh, bad news! I tried on Twitch that another top show in AES history is a hot dog a taco. Ooh, also beards. Remember the 1 hour Guy Fieri pregame show?
Oh, do I remember that?
That show was fun.
That was like, was that an hour or was that like 30 minutes?
I think it was 1 hour instead of 2 hours.
Okay.
On location. Pre the opening of Guy Fieri's dive and taco joint or whatever it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Did I tell you guys about this? Is the context here is going to be obvious, so I'm gonna go ahead and reverse engineer it. I guess my mom sent me a picture. I may have mentioned this on the show already, and if so, I'm just going to tell it again. My mom sent me a picture of her desk at her work at the school that she's working at. And just like the setup, and she's like, oh, it's a nice little like space, and everything's, you know, it's a nice, just chill little workspace. I very much appreciate the value of a chill, like nice, kind of well organized little workspace. My office at home is like a huge mess, but the parts that I need to be organized to function are well organized.
Organized chaos, basically.
It's definitely organized chaos. There is a pile of dirty clothes and then baskets full of clean clothes, but it's at least sort of an organized chaos. But I'm all about a good, you know, like a satisfying workspace. And my mom's got like, I think there's like the computer there, and it's like, you know, a little cup full of pens and some other stuff, and then some like framed pictures and everything. And I think there's like a full family picture and like a picture of my brother and sister and whatnot. And then there's a picture of me. But the picture of me is the picture of me and Guy Fieri. That is the picture of me that has made it onto my mom's desk. It is a picture of Guy Fieri that also has me in it. And that was just a really, like, that's going to be, it should probably be my Twitter avatar. It should probably be on my tombstone. Like, it's going to be really, really difficult for me to top that for literally anyone in my life to have a better picture of me than the one that has Guy Fieri directly over my shoulder. But that's how my family chooses to remember that I exist in this world. I also think I think he's the most famous person that I have a picture with. I can't think of what. Like, there are pictures of me near Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, I know who my answer is for this.
Okay, Rudy, you know what your answer for this is?
I don't have any pictures of like famous people. I mean, like, there's a picture on ESPN.com of me standing behind Patrick Mahomes, but that's not really a picture of me and Patrick Mahomes.
Right, it's a picture of Patrick Mahomes with you in the vicinity of. Yeah, that's fair. Beards is pretty tickled about his answer to this question.
When I was, like, 5, I think.
Love this already. Larry the Cable Guy.
No.
No, I also have a picture with him.
I probably have a picture with Frank White somewhere from when I was a kid, but I couldn't tell you where.
There are definitely some pictures of you and Mitch Holthus just around the internet.
Yeah,
handful
fair.
Of Chiefs Kingdom pictures, probably.
Probably Mitch Holthus from like somebody who like where like I know the photo exists.
Yeah. But you weren't supposed to be in it. You just were in it.
No. I was there's photos like me standing at, like me and Mitch posing for the camera.
Oh, okay.
So, like,
I see.
And then also, I mean, like, there's probably like a. My dad in storage probably has a picture of me and Mickey Mouse somewhere as well.
Wow, big that's your winner. I mean, Mickey Mouse is more famous than Guy Fieri.
Might actually be the same trip where I got a picture with Frank White. I met Frank White in Orlando when we went to Disney World. We were at like the ESPN restaurant down there, and Frank White just happened to be in the restaurant at the same time we were there, and that's where I met Frank White.
Okay. Anyway, Beard, sorry, go ahead. Sorry,
Beards. I got an autographed book that has like Mickey, Donald, Goofy, Frank White.
That's pretty good. I like that. What's your answer, Beards? You were 5.
So when I was 5, there was one PBS show that I liked a lot, and that was
Sesame Street.
The Kratt Brothers show.
Hell yeah.
They came to Kansas City 1 year. And had like a meet and greet out at the parking lot over by what turned out to be now Zona Rosa. And so me and a couple of my, you know, 5-year-old friends, we went, and I've got a picture somewhere of me with the Kratt Brothers.
Now, it's you and your five-year-old friends. This was 2 years ago.
Right.
But it's still a picture of you with the Crap Brothers and your five-year-old friends.
I don't know who those are or who those people are.
The Crap Brothers?
You don't know?
Zaboomafoo.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know Zaboomafoo?
I didn't watch PBS growing up.
You don't know Zaboomafoo?
No. When I was five, I was probably watching like Dragon Ball Z and Beyblade and those type of shows.
You nerd.
No, this is just whenever Beards and I are outed as being like remarkably
Christian
sheltered
boys.
Children. Yeah. Yeah, because like the
Crap Brothers are awesome. How dare.
No, but I'm also telling the absolute truth. Like, if we weren't watching Bible Man Beards, we were at least allowed to watch
yes.
Zaboomafoo.
You watched Bible Man. I didn't watch Bible Man.
You missed out. The best Avenger. No, but like PBS was, except for Arthur, which
yeah,
I occasionally was not allowed to watch Arthur.
What?
I think it was too sassy at some point.
PBS.
What? Arthur was too sassy?
Yeah, I think, what was the little girl with the braids or whatever? The rich girl with the braids? Is it Muffy?
Yeah, that
the vampire
right.
slayer? Muffy the vampire slayer? I don't
Muffy
know.
Muffy the aardvark slayer.
Or at some point,
that's,
you know what
I
it might have been?
Right.
It might have even been the episode where Arthur, with it turned into the Arthur meme of his fist, where he ends
oh.
up punching DW.
Yeah, I remember that.
Something in there somewhere, I think, at least got Arthur
really?
On kind of like the maybe a bad example
maybe
list.
Maybe he's not okay.
But here's the thing also, and this is true for Beards and also incredibly important. How old are your siblings?
My sister's 8 years younger than me.
I definitely made your siblings plural, and you don't have
no,
multiple siblings. You
have
the
one.
I think I knew
one.
That. She's 8 years younger than you?
Yes.
It's a pretty big gap. Mm-hmm. I'm five and a half years older than my brother and 1,000 years older than my sister.
I'm like 16 months older than my sister.
So that's also, you were firstborn, but by a much smaller margin. My brother being the middle child, like I had episodes of Arthur being skipped because there were bad attitudes, and Caleb was playing Call of Duty at like 18 months old. Like he was cursing at people over a headset as a toddler, you know?
Yeah.
And then Chloe just like walks around and just catches snakes and stuff, which isn't really comparable in any particular way. It's just the truth of the matter. But that's the first baby things where I had to sneak out to watch episodes of Cyber Chase.
Cyber Chase is the bomb.
I love Cyber Chase.
So
Cyber
bad.
Chase was so good.
No idea what Cyber Chase is, but no idea.
It's got Gilbert Gottfried
and Christopher Lloyd.
I don't know.
Is
maybe,
Christopher Lloyd the
I
villain
know.
Guy?
Maybe
is
I
he's Cyber hacker?
Chase.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Let's see. I don't think I do, but maybe I do.
Something Hacker and his gang.
Listen,
yeah, definitely.
If you were watching Dragon Ball Z at the age of five, then by the time that Cyber Chase started coming around, you were definitely not watching that.
This show came out in 2002? Yeah, there's no
yeah,
way I was
no.
watching
Oh,
Cyber
yeah,
Chase.
Deep into Cyber Chase. Rudy
yeah,
was watching
yeah,
Dragon
yeah.
Ball Z, and I was watching Dragon Tales.
No, in 2002, I mean, honestly, I saw Animal House when I was like six. Like
Point
I was
proven.
Watching those times. Like my,
I wasn't allowed to play.
Dad,
I wasn't allowed to play Animal Crossing until I was 16.
I would go. Me and my dad, when we'd be driving around, we'd be listening to a cassette tape. Yeah, cassette tapes of Roy D. Mercer, who would prank call people and basically be like, just basically talk about how he was going to kick their ass. Like that was the whole thing. He would prank call people and basically just threaten to beat them up.
We watched shows about beating people up with science.
Yeah, I watched Bill Nye. I was a big Bill Nye guy.
I think
Bill Nye was awesome.
I think Bill Nye may have been too fully endorsing the concept of evolution
for me
at that young of an age.
On Twitch, Jayhawks fan says, I've been made of my whole life for not being able to watch Pokemon because it teaches evolution and Harry Potter magic. The idea
that's
that you,
absolutely
so
true.
I saw a video on YouTube today. Because obviously it's Pokemon's 25th anniversary coming up, where that was a big deal back in the day, where parents were like trying, especially in the UK, were like boycotting or wanting to boycott Pokemon because it it teached evolution.
Yeah.
Until the Pope at that time came out and was like, hey guys, Pokemon's cool. The Pope came out and said Pokemon is cool.
Wow.
And that's when like it was like they were like parents were like, okay, I guess we'll let, you know, let you watch this.
Yeah,
evolution filth.
I was never allowed to read or watch Harry Potter because it had witchcraft. And now my mom and my little sister just watch it. Harry Potter just constantly on in the house.
Yeah.
That's
I was a
eldest
huge
child problems.
Bill Nye guy. Watched a lot of Bill Nye.
I don't think I was allowed to be anywhere near Bill Nye until I was in my early 20s.
Bill Nye came out was 93 to 98. That's when I was 3 to 8 years old. Bill Nye was, I mean, that was my science teacher.
The thing is, I was homeschooled, and so he could have literally been my science teacher.
Instead, he was the devil.
Has my mom commented on Facebook?
Not a lot.
All right, thank God. Have I gotten any
messages?
One
getter
no,
down says he watched Friday the 13th at 6, scarred him for life. I watched Chucky at like 6, scarred me for like legitimately the next 5 years of my life. I would jump onto my bed because I was afraid that there was a doll underneath it ready to kill me.
Dragon Tales, Dragon Tales.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Dodgeball is fun. I like dodgeball. Even though I was homeschooled, I would just get a basketball and then I would just throw it at my little brother. Just like,
I was gonna say you versus your dad.
Just walking around
at the age of 8.
Right?
How'd that have gone?
Right.
Boom!
My dad just winds up with a soccer ball. Yes.
All right, you gotta go to the nurse.
You walk into your mom's
room. Mom, my eye fell out. Dad hit me in the back of the head with a soccer ball, 80 miles an hour.
That's Professor Briscoe to you.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
So tell me what any of these do for you guys here.
I do now remember Reading Rainbow, but I did never watch
Unbelievable.
Rainbow.
You never watched Reading
Rainbow.
I do Rainbow.
Remember, because I remember LeVar Burton.
Unbelievable. But you were watching freaking Star Trek.
I was watching both.
Between the Lions.
Yes.
Rudy, nothing?
Between the Lions?
Lions.
Okay, yeah, no.
They were lions that were in charge of a library.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't even, yep. There, it was
I just
a,
had to see. No, okay, I got
good.
One
Let's
for you.
The next one. Okay,
Monster
go ahead.
Farm.
No.
Okay.
Nothing. This one's a real. This is a bit of a deep cut, I think. But Beards, did you ever watch JJ the Jet Plane?
No, that was.
I remember
that was
JJ
my sister's age.
JJ the Jet Plane is an acid trip.
Oh, I know.
That show is bonkers.
Metabots.
No. Liberty's Kids?
Yes.
Liberty's
Metabots?
Kids? Do you remember Liberty's Kids?
Metabots got a 6.9
grade. Oh, I played the video
grade.
Game. Never mind.
Remember Liberty's Kids?
I remember Liberty's Kids.
Liberty's Kids is a banger.
DuckTales.
A little bit. Berenstain Bears.
Darkwing Duck!
Berenstain Bears?
No.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I know it.
I read the books.
Recess.
Recess is awesome.
Dragon Ball Z. Ooh, the Amanda Show was great.
Who was the Amanda? Was it
Amanda Bynes?
Bynes, yeah.
It also had Drake Bell in it.
Do you know that he's does everything in Spanish now?
Oh, really?
There's a whole weird kind of dark Drake Bell
All
story.
That was also fantastic.
I was watching Dragon Tales. Bye, Mom.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.